art is powerful, but it's also alive. Well, how many people stop and go something like, okay, the Word of God is powerful, able to divide even between the bone and the marrow. Well, what does that look like? What does that really look like? Does this come from heaven, or is this just the mechanics of the universe around us? The sad thing is, guys, when I get into New Age circles, which isn't very often, they understand me better than most Christians. Now, how is that possible other than all they have is the mechanical part of the multiverse? That's what they're searching out. Well, guess who's supposed to be in control of that? The sons and daughters of the king. That's part of what Adam's assignment was.
Welcome to the Days of Noah podcast, where we talk all things biblical, supernatural, and strange. Today, Luke and I are privileged to have, for the first time, Dr. Robert Roditch, and he wrote a book called Moving Towards Sonship, a book that God gave to him almost as a download as he is revealing the plans and purposes for how we are supposed to operate as God's children. And there are clues in the Bible about these kinds of things, and yeah, it goes a little deep. Yeah, it's not the milk of the spiritual word. It is definitely meat, something we have to chew on and wrestle with and try to wrap our heads around. And one of the issues with that is there is some risk involved. It can sound New Age. It can sound kind of woo-woo, you know, not very tangible, not very easy to put our fingers on it. But I think it's important for Christians to understand that, number one, there is a lot more to our life with God in the way that we were meant to function in this dimension, in this fallen world, than we've experienced. And so with prayerful consideration and testing all things and holding fast to what is good, testing things against the true word of God, we can come to discernment. And so with that idea in mind, Doc and Luke and I discuss how God's word has been dumbed down via the English translations, how there's meanings in Hebrew and Greek that are lost as we translate, how Christians often fear the unknown and stay safe in their theology, and dismiss some of the more fantastical supernatural things. And Doc also gets into how his unique voice print analysis allows him to discern things about our spiritual condition with God. It's pretty fascinating. And I honestly can't wrap my head fully around it. There's laws at work, spiritual laws at work, mechanics at work. And as Doc points out, it's often in the New Age and occultic world that they have tapped into this, but they do it without God. They cut him out and try to do it on their terms. So, with all this in mind, prayerfully consider that maybe how we were designed to function as believers is being robbed from us, and God has more. It comes through humility and obedience first, of course, and testing everything against his word. So with that, let's dive into our first part of our conversation with Doc Roditch. Well, great to have you, Dr. Robert Roditch, right?
Roditch, yeah. Just like, yes. Like a road with an itch, and you just say it real fast.
That's what I was just thinking in my head this morning. Yep, road itch. A condition for which there is no cure.
That's right.
Yeah. We're happy to have you and on the Days of Noah podcast. And what's great is, so I've been collaborating and becoming friends with Rod from the Millennial Mustard Seed. And so that's of course how I found out about you. So we're happy to have you here, Doctor. You know, we've talked since I had you do a voice analysis, and it's fascinating stuff. And I know we're going to get into that. So it's a pleasure to have you. And this is my brother, Luke. He's down in Louisiana.
Good morning. Hey,
yo, Cajun. I was born in Lake Charles, so I won't even tell you what they call us. But you probably know.
It's worse, huh?
Yeah. But
you're more Texan than Louisiana out there.
Yeah, I mean, Louisiana is a big state. But when you're down on the Gulf, they... The French have a way of referring to each other, and since I was born down there, they always, I won't even say it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not that case in Lake Charles area. I know Shreveport has got a lot of Texas influence more than a lot of the people, you know, in the Bayou and even the North Shore area, which have a lot more festivals and stuff around here.
Yeah. Well, they have a lingo that they use. And whenever I've been down there, I can't hardly understand the old timers, you know, I mean, and you know, I remember as a kid, they always used to come up and slap my face and everything. And after a while it kind of got irritating, you know, and it's like, no, that just shows they love you. I said, yeah, but they don't have to slap me so hard.
Yeah. Harsh.
It's either that or the pinch of the cheek, I guess.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had plenty of grandmas that did that.
Yeah, that's a grandma thing. Me and Luke grew up here in Wisconsin. I'm still here.
Well, I remember throwing up a cup of coffee when I lived in Wisconsin years ago because I'm still a big Packers fan. So,
there you go.
And good to see Jordan Love come around. Yeah, I mean, I go back to Bart Starr, guys. So that's how old I am. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom's.
But you said you got roots in Lake Charles. So how did you become a Packers fan? Unless they're just everywhere.
All right. So, no. They probably are.
Sidebar. I mean,
probably in
America's
Europe.
Team.
No, my dad.
No, my wife disputes that. It's not Dallas. It's Green Bay is America's team.
Oh, well, Dallas just made that up. They're so needy.
I know it.
I mean,
I love it.
I mean, you know, come on. My dad was in the Air Force, and I was born in Lake Charles. And but my family is from central Iowa, particularly Des Moines. And so back in 1958, when I was 5 years old, my dad said, okay, you got to pick a team, either the Packers or the Bears. And I've never liked the
Easy
Bears.
Choice.
Actually, I hate the Bears, you know, and you know, I know you're not supposed to hate as a believer, but I think in sports it's okay. So, you know, just in case
sports,
anybody.
And sin.
Yeah, that's right. You hate sin and hate the Bears. And so I started out and interestingly enough, when I lived in Louisville, Kentucky, some years ago, cause we've only been here in South Alabama for 4 years. I got to meet Paul Hornung and had a picture with him. And then he passed away about a year or two after that. But, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and, for sure.
But anyway, in Alabama.
Yeah.
4 years.
4 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We visit there a lot. That's one of our favorite vacation spots. And actually a member of a church down the street from you there in Daphne, Church of His Presence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where we go to church.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, whenever I'm not with like
John.
Yeah, I got a funny brother John story. Are we recording right now?
Yeah, we are, and I want to get to that story. So, yeah, I was just going to ask you quick to go back to kind of the connection to Rod with the Millennial Mustard Seed. How was it that you guys got in touch?
Well, okay, so gosh, you almost have to go back to the beginning because four years ago we moved down here from Louisville, Kentucky. My wife and I both had careers up there. And we retired. Her middle son, who worked for a, what would you call like an offshoot of Verizon Wireless, was transferred from Louisville to Indianapolis, Indiana. and which is only 2.5 hours away. But I mean, there's a big difference in temperature, and we just knew we didn't want to go north, and because she's a Mississippi girl, and there's no, I mean, it was cold enough in Louisville, and so we said we got to do something. Where could we move that everybody would come and see us? And so we said, okay, let's go to the beach. Well, you don't really move on the beach because, you know, it's millions of dollars even back then. And so we moved to a little town 8 miles north of the beach called Foley, which has now got all kinds of infrastructure and building a new hospital wing and all that kind of stuff. So, but I moved here to retire because I'm a pretty good golfer. I still shoot when I have a good day. I shoot around 80, and you know, if I miss a few putts, I'm 85. So for a guy 70, that's not too bad. And so anyway, we go to Brother John's church a couple of weeks after we're here, maybe 3 weeks, because we had to unpack and everything. And you got to understand, I mean, I've been Assemblies of God pastor for 30 years, and I've been around, you know, a lot, the district and even the superintendents for the entire nation of the Assemblies, and been prayed for by just about every big name that you can think of. And I hardly ever get slain in the spirit or anything like that. Okay. Cause I'm just kind of, you know, I'm an energy guy, so I'm kind of used to it. So we go up there and my wife says, "Hey, Brother John, he's praying for people. You need to go on up." Well, I'm not one of these guys that I'm going to, you know, force my way up like everybody's like fighting and trying to throw each other to the side, just to have him pray for you. So I wasn't going to do that. So he moseys on over to me, and I'm not a small guy. I mean, I'm a little over 6 feet tall, but he's at least that tall, maybe about 6'2". And I only weigh 175 pounds and he weighs a couple pounds more than that. But he's got these big old hands, you know, like a mitt. He puts it on my head and pulls my ear up to his mouth because you can't hear anything a foot away from you. And he says, "I'm going to tell you, the Lord's telling me to tell you that you thought you were going to move down here to retire. But the Lord has other plans for you. You're going to be busier than you ever have been in your life. And that this is God, the move is of God, and get ready because it's fixing to get busy." Well, that's what we say, getting ready to down here in the South, fix it. So I said, okay. Well, what was funny was there was chairs right behind me. So I felt a little something. So I just politely sat down and we left early because we wanted to grab a bite. And my wife has had a knee replacement. So there was this gravel parking lot and I didn't want her to walk across it. So I dropped her off at the door and I went and parked the car, and I get out of the car and fall flat on my face into the gravel. I'm out from the glory, and
in the parking lot,
in the face down in the gravel.
Goodness.
So I finally come in, and she says, "Where were you?" I said, "I don't know if you're going to believe this, but I've felt, you know, and I've prayed for thousands of people through the years, and you know, they'll just go down, you know, just like dropping a feather and things like that. Not all the time, but some of the time. I never felt anything that heavy." It was so heavy, the presence of God, that it almost hurt.
And, so I know some people might be wondering, why would the Lord do that to you on gravel, and were you injured?
Well, okay, so no, I wasn't injured, and even my glasses weren't scratched, so that's the amazing thing. But why would he do it? Who knows? I mean, the real spiritual ones out there are going to say, "Well, brother, you needed humbling. So God just wanted to prove himself to you." Well, he doesn't need to prove himself to me. I mean, you know, with everything I've done through the years, I know exactly who he is. I know exactly who I am, and still learning and expanding. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just, he does fun things. Didn't hurt me. It was funny. I mean, who expects that? And plus it makes a great story too. So, I mean,
it does.
You know, sometimes people forget God is probably this don't take this wrong, but Jesus has a tremendous sense of humor. Who says the Father doesn't? Who says Holy Spirit doesn't?
Right.
You know, and
when you
and
can I'm testify sure the eight- that God puts you on your face in the gravel, I wasn't injured, it felt wonderful, and I'm feeling great.
Yeah, I mean, I agree
know,
with
that's
that.
That's a great combination.
Yeah. I agree with everything, except I wouldn't say it felt wonderful. It didn't feel bad, but the heaviness of the, that was what they called the kabod of God. You know, there's different levels
where
it
lingers.
Yeah. And it's like, it just wouldn't go away. And, you know, that's just like yesterday, my wife and I, we go to this little place in a little town just away, and she gets her hair done and I get a haircut there. And I was sitting out in the car and I had forgotten that I put one of these ephods that I've been making on. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, I can't hardly breathe. What is going on? And it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't like having a panic attack. The glory was so heavy. I wasn't even thinking about it. It's not like, you know, I had, you know, Travis Cottrell on the background and, you know,
emotional.
You know, wasn't anything like that. I was sitting there thinking about going over to the post office and mailing some of my product out to people. And I had to sit there. I could not move. The glory was so heavy. And finally, I just released it into the area around me, and then I could function. So God's going to do what he's going to do. But we have to remember, as sons and daughters of the King, things don't operate outside of planet Earth the way that we think that they do. It's a big mistake to try to bring it into our limited understanding. Oh, my goodness. The technologies, the way he communicates, everything is so different. I mean, imagine being outside up there and having 360 degree vision. I mean, in the color spectrum,
the colors.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I always think that when God's presence gets on us like that, and I could testify some of my own experiences similar to yours, in this natural fleshly body that we're in, we're not in our glorified bodies yet. When God's presence comes in and intermingles with this dimension or plane of existence that we're in, our bodies just can't handle that.
Right. And that's why
a lot of times where we feel faint.
Right. And that's exactly what happens. However, there is a workaround. The workaround is you bring your body, soul, and spirit into alignment, and then you have those experiences on a regular basis because, guys, we're supposed to live in both realms at the same time.
True.
Yeah, that's the premise of your sonship in your book, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's called Moving Towards Sonship.
Before we move into that, I just wanted to add, too, because as we were talking about how Luke got to the South, and it was right, it was Camp Pendleton in San Diego, right, for boot camp, and then off to was Florida next, Pensacola.
Yeah. My job was avionics. I was stationed there at NES Pensacola.
So then we were visiting as a family, and during the Brownsville revival, when John Kilpatrick was part of that, and I was 17, and that was my kind of making my faith my own time. I got to see Ray Comfort speak down there, and that he really solidified it for me. Loved him so much. My older sister bought me his entire book set for a birthday present. But I wanted to add this because you're talking about not being emotional and then having this come out of the blue. Like, you didn't conjure it up, right? Same thing. So
you mean when Brother John prayed for me?
Well, you were talking about
just yesterday.
Yeah, the more recent story.
No, I wasn't even. No offense, but Lord, I wasn't even thinking about him.
Exactly. So to that point, same thing happened to me. We were in the revival services one night. Luke, I don't know if you know all of this story, but you were there. We were all in the pew, and I'm hearing Luke and older sister speak in tongues. There's an altar call. I want to go up. I feel, you know, good idea. And I'm not, again, not emotional, not particularly sad or convicted or anything, right? I get up to that altar and I kneel and I'm weeping for 10 minutes straight.
Yep.
And that to me was God's spirit that I had never experienced probably since. And, because again, there wasn't anything like, oh, I'm so burdened by this. And then it just spilled out, right? It hit me.
Well, what can happen in times like that is that when the presence of God is so profound, there is an alignment that begins taking place, almost a synchronization between the body, soul, and spirit. And it can be our soul crying out for, you know, because the soul is really kind of the culprit in everything. And when the spirit doesn't take charge, which none of us were born that way, that's why we need to be born again, or one of the reasons. And all of a sudden things starting to align in such precious presence of the Lord, even we'll have an inner weeping and we don't even know where it comes from. It's because our body is saying, we're meant to be more than this.
And so
it can manifest in so many different ways. One of the big issues that I had with revivals through the years, because I've been around for a long time. I mean, I was still old when the Brownsville revival was going on. So, but is that, you know, after two or three days, the glory seems to fizzle out. Well, that's not the way we're designed in the second Adam. The glory is supposed to stay. Now, it doesn't mean that everywhere where we walk in Walmart, the people need to drop over in the aisles. You know, we can kind of crank it up or crank it down, but we're supposed to stay in all the time. And that's what it means to be living and walking in the spirit, at least part of it. And, you know, but that there's training involved, you know, there's things we have to learn, obviously.
Yeah. So you were a pastor in Assembly of God churches for a good three decades, right? And then was it concurrent with that, that you were also a doctor of natural medicine? Did that come later? How did that work in?
Well, I mean, I started my schooling before that, but I started coming down with a mild heart arrhythmia that they didn't have any solution for. And so, you know, the Lord sovereignly leads, and one thing led to another. And I was able to get to a training session by a gentleman by the name of Dr. D.A. Versendahl. And it happened to be in Dallas, and I lived in near Memphis at the time, Memphis, Tennessee, where I was pastoring. And when I filled out the material, I put the degree down that I had, which was DD, and I think they thought it was that I left the S off. And so they let me in, and once I got there, they were gracious and let me stay. Well, at the end, Dr. Versendahl made a plea, and he said, I've been trying to get a hold of Ronald Reagan because he is coming down with Alzheimer's, and I'd like to see if I can do anything with him for nutrition. So I went up afterwards and I said, now, Dr. Versendahl, I can't make any promises, but it just so happens that my grandfather's sister, my Aunt Bessie, is Ronald Reagan's sister-in-law. And so in other words, her husband, Neil Reagan, which I never knew his name was Neil till he probably after he died, because I always called him Uncle Moon. That was his name. Ronald was Dutch and he was Moon. And so I tried to get him in touch, and I don't know whether it was ever successful, but Dr. Versendahl took a liking to me, and he actually paid for my PhD level studies in clinical nutrition. And because I was the kind of pastor that they sent to places that were in trouble, and kind of like home missions work, if you're familiar with the assemblies. It's not always home missions because you're not always starting a work. Sometimes a work you almost need to start over, and that's what I would do. So I had to have another way to make a living, and that ended up being, so I would do them simultaneously, kind of like the funeral director who was in the assemblies that I met one time. Seemed like he was from Western Iowa at the time when I was pastoring in Iowa. He said he didn't pray for the sick because it was bad for business, because he was a funeral director. So, but his name was, conflict of interest. So, but he was kidding, of course. He certainly did.
Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. So again, you wrote a book on, can you share the title again?
Being it's a called son and moving, daughter of God? Moving Towards Sonship.
Yes. Yes.
So it is available at lulu.com, and also you can get it from Amazon, but not Amazon Kindle, because it's got a workbook in it. That format wouldn't go into Kindle. So you just type in Moving Towards Sonship, and then you can order it the way that you would order, I don't know, an energy drink or something from Amazon.
Right.
And the book itself is kind of an interesting story, because as I got back, remember I said I moved down here to play golf and mow my lawn and water my all the menagerie of everything that's in the backyard that my wife had me put in. And So a funny story, actually, there's a lot of funny stories, but she got booted off of Facebook, so I didn't ever have a Facebook page. And she said, hey, I got to sell something, because we hadn't been here all that long. And can I start one up for you? And I said, sure. And, you know, she's real sharp with that kind of thing. So when she finally got reinstated to Facebook, I took it over and I started connecting with all these heaven groups, because I'm, you know, I've met Ian Clayton and Grant and Samantha Mahoney. I actually did consultations for them and, you know, some of the people that are in what I call the heaven movement, and started connecting, and people started wanting me to do workups on them. Well, I thought, okay, but the Lord kept giving me these downloads, like maybe 8 or 10 typewritten pages here and there. And before long, I laid it out on my, I call it my man cave, but it's my man cave, my office, my everything. It's where I watch the Packers. Hopefully they'll be Kansas City Sunday night, but that's just a little, you know, a shameless plug. But anyway, so all of a sudden I start doing more of these consultations and I felt like I needed to give people something, you know, so I'd send them a little bit of what I had, the download that I got. Well, eventually the trail led to Dr. Ron Horner and his ministry in Pinehurst, North Carolina. So I sent it all to him, and he calls me on the phone, which he does quite regularly. And he said, Doc, this is a book. Just make the segues. And now I'd like to say that I'm this super brilliant guy and, you know, author and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But honestly, about 90% of it was a download. So I can't, you know, I'll give the Lord credit for it. However, what it does is, and because I was talking to my wife many times and I said, look, there is a gap. People don't know how to transition out of being a Methodist or a Lutheran or a Baptist. They don't have the terminology. You know, we have Christianese bad enough as it is, and they don't even really know. Everything seems new age. It seems spooky. They don't understand that we're supposed to be living in heaven and earth at the same time. They don't have any concept of that, even though the scripture is super, super clear on that. You know, Christ in me, the hope of glory, seated with him, Christ Jesus in heavenly places. Those are not metaphors. Those are descriptions of things that actually happen in the multidimensional realms. Okay. So anyway, that's why I wrote the book, because it really does fill the gap. I talk about gray energy, dark energy, how the enemy does what he does, how there's a prayer in the book that actually closes the door to frequency warfare from the enemy's camp. And so far, if a person is a believer, it's worked 100% of the time. And many of these people have actually tested a number against their DNA, and it's in the normal number is supposed to be 19. The Lord's never told me why it's supposed to be 19, but hardly anybody's ever 19. I found one person that hadn't said that prayer whose DNA was 19. Everybody else, it was like 3, 6, 9, you know, whatever. And so they prayed the prayer, and all of a sudden, they're not getting attacked the same way. Well, there's still a whole lot of work to do beyond that. However, this book is a good segue for people, and I have people that send me emails all the time. They say, man, I just can't get away from your book. I go back and I read this chapter again. I do this, and because I have to see how it fits together. And I say, well, give the glory to the Lord, because he's the one that gave it to me.
Yeah, I had that same impression too, that it's very dense and that you do have to revisit sections multiple times. I've gone through it twice now, thanks to my favorite text-to-speech app, and since you graciously gave me the PDF, so I can listen to the book, mm-hmm. which is a good thing in getting through it quick while I'm at work, but it's not so great for the workbook side of it and missing some things. So I will definitely go back through again. But yeah, I think you connect a lot of dots in the spiritual realm, and also in things that are missing, reasons that Christians are suffering in spiritual ways and other ways that we need to get to the root of, we need to get to the bottom of. That to me has been my personal interest in looking into deliverance ministry and things like that. You know, Steve Harmon, a deliverance pastor or minister, has talked about fractures, mm-hmm. you know, emotional fractures being sure. different than a demonic attachment. And I think what struck me about what you've talked about with your website, your voice analysis, and your book is there seems to be this gap of getting from A to Z or point A to B. And that's where I think we got to inquire of the Lord. Like, what are these? What's the reason I'm still struggling? Is it a generational curse? Is there some prayer that I need to pray to close a door? Because there are spiritual laws at work. And if we're ignorant of those laws, then we can't address it. Right?
Exactly. Well, I think that's what's really important for people to understand, because believe me, I've been around for a long time. I mean, I go back over 50 years. So, you know, I've seen it all. I absolutely love Catherine Kuhlman and, Corey Ten Boom and, a lot of those people. In fact, I got a story one time. I came home from work back in the 70s and I felt the glory in the house. And I thought, what's going on? Because I think my three oldest boys were already born, but the twins would have been just still in their crib or their, what would they call that thing? It wasn't a crib, the thing that looked like a jail, like the pack and play playpen. Thing. Yeah, playpen.
Yeah.
Pack and play. Yeah. But the, I walk in and here's Corey Ten Boom being interviewed by Pat Robertson on the 700 Club on the TV. And the glory was coming out of the TV into the house. And, so the point in saying all of that is there comes a point where we have to realize that the Lord Jesus wants us free on every level. But the reason, and my book kind of spells this out, the reason that it doesn't happen instantaneously, like some people say that it does, we get positionally, we get everything. But then we have to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. It's not to stay saved. Either you're saved or you're not. It's to work out all of the wears and tears and traumas and generational things. So when you have a segment of the church that doesn't even believe in generational issues, that segment is in trouble because they don't have an explanation for everything that's going on with their people. And so then look at what the church has devolved into today, where it's, I don't even understand this whole gender pronoun stuff, and they're, it's starting to slip into the church and it's like, give me a break. Hmm. I mean, John Wayne would be rolling over in his grave. Come on.
For sure. Yeah, and you come into things like cessationism where, if one person gets an instant healing in the world in 8 billion people in the last hundreds of years, well, it's more than 8 billion in hundreds of years. If one person, then cessationism is incorrect. But right there, you've discounted an entire manner of faith. You're saying, nope, I'm not even going to pray for that. I'm not even going to believe that. I'm going to teach this in my church that this is the way it is. And you've cut yourself off from what God is capable of.
Well, see, here's one of the things that it just dawned on me not all that long ago, because I've always kind of been a big picture guy anyway. What if nothing out there is really what we're being told that it is? And I mean almost everything is not what we're being told that it is. There has been an undercurrent of Luciferianism and control from the dark side that goes back very closely to the fall of man and certainly to the Tower of Babel. Okay. If you just do even a little bit of research about how different Bible translations came into being and the people behind them were all Masonically related, just about. And because of that, of course, they're going to slip in that there's no longer miracles. Okay? Just the way they've left whole meanings out of every single English version because it doesn't translate. So, because I've had people come up to me and say, well, I'm sensing in the spirit that there's been things left out of the Bible. Well, yeah, but it would be even better. That's the point. It would be even stronger if we really saw the way that that was said initially in Hebrew and then perhaps in Greek and Aramaic. I mean, they were talking like we're talking now.
Yeah.
Back then, and the whole thing got squelched. And for me, it finally came up to a head some time ago when this one brother, and you got to understand, I'm in the South, so I don't really have a Southern accent to speak of, but I can speak in Southern if I have. I can speak Wisconsinese too. So, hey, go get my coat, eh? So, but anyway.
That's in the North.
Yeah. So this one brother comes up and he says, "Brother, what Bible you use?" I said, I like the Amplified, I'll read several different ones. "Oh, man, I don't know how effective you're going to be. I use the Bible that the Apostle Paul used." And I said, "Well, which one is that?" He said, "The King James Version." I said, "Yeah, I guess Paul probably was close to 1611,
1500 years.
Yeah, And so... The point is, it has been dumbed down so much that has, I think, been because I'm a big word guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not Jack Van Impe. I kind of wish I was with my that level of knowledge. I've just got too many other things I've always been doing through the years on a more practical way to. But I have a lot of it, obviously memorized. But the word is powerful, but it's also alive. Well, how many people stop and go something like, okay, the word of God is powerful, able to divide even between the bone and the marrow and the joints and, all this other kind of stuff. Okay. Well, what does that look like? What does that really look like? That's obviously a picture that's being shared with us, but who stops and says, what does that look like? Well, I'm one of those guys, silly me, that no matter what comes down the pipeline, I go, okay, how can this be applied? What does that look like? Does this come from heaven, or is this just the mechanics of the universe around us? Because the sad thing is, guys, when I get into New Age circles, which isn't very often, frankly, even though I get accused of being New Age all the time, which is totally ridiculous. I've been covered by the blood and, bought with his, everything that he did. And, you're not New Age if you're like that. But they understand me better than most Christians. Now, how is that possible other than all they have is the mechanical part of the multiverse? That's what they're searching out. Well, guess who's supposed to be in control of that? The sons and daughters of the King. That's part of what Adam's assignment was.
And that's a missing gap. Okay, because we've talked many times, Luke, about, Mike Heiser, the late Dr. Michael Heiser, going to UFO conferences and connecting with secular people who are into supernatural and fringe stuff, and finding they're more interested in how the Bible and the biblical history connects to those events and those creatures than what Christians are interested. Christians are like, no, that's crazy. Roll their eyes. And here you are saying it again.
It's like we've talked about it. You're right. A lot of religious Christians or Christians in general, when it comes to the supernatural, when it comes to the things that you're talking about, doctor, it's like a part of their brain. They just turn it off. Once they hear a little bit of it, they dismiss it completely. And I don't know if it's a religious spirit or an ideology where they're so afraid to go down that path and ask those questions.
I think it is fear.
Like they're abandoning their faith if they talk about energies, or if they talk about giants and the supernatural and stuff, or UFOs.
It's a like cognitive dissonance.
I got to stay in this bubble that I'm this safe bubble, or we talked about preachers. They stay in a safe theology, and they don't ask those hard questions. And that's one thing I love. Shout out to Pastor John Kilpatrick again. He's willing. Remember the message he preached on what I'm if?
Vexed. Oh, yeah.
And he was willing to ask those questions.
Yeah. I mean,
and, hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. At least my congregation is aware that the enemy is trying to deceive us and might show up as green men or, you know, whatever. So.
Well, he preached on, he preached on AI, which how many pastors have done that? And of course that there's a chap, there's a portion of my book about AI because the Nephilim spirits are actually taking over the quantum computers.
That's true.
And so, I mean, so, and he, and he, and he pointed that out. So this didn't come from old Doc Rodich, John. I mean, well, actually I wrote about it before I heard the message by about 6 months. And I did turn it over to my manuscript over to some of the people at the church. So who knows if it filtered up.
Well, I,
so
I wanted to, but let me just comment real quick, Luke, on what you just said, because I think, and we could go at length, but I'll just say a minute or two here on this is, it is about fear. I think Christians are dumbed down because we're relying on our leadership in churches to do the work for us, and we show up passive. We've talked about that many times and how, you know, as a family, I'm exploring and we've done home church with only Christ as the functional head. And we're still learning what that looks like. But I think most Christians, they show up, they're passive, and they trust their leadership to tell us what these verses mean, and then they go home and go, ah, I got it now. I don't need to research anymore. So we're not doing the homework. Number
well,
two,
I can tell you, I can just let me interrupt you for a minute and then continue, but I can tell you exactly why that happens, but finish what you're going to say. And then,
yeah, absolutely.
Then you guys can all finish. It's your show. I'm just telling you, but, no, this is but I won't forget this because I know exactly what that looks like on paper, why that happens.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. And then also, and we've kind of hinted on this too, like even back with Ryan Peterson, that the Age of Enlightenment and Darwinian theory coming in, that it seemed like the churches and the seminaries dialed back some of this supernatural stuff and stayed in this cozy little safe, let's make Christianity practical. And so a lot of those weirder things, they kind of shied away from. And I think the same thing is going on, Doc, with what you're talking about, where Christians don't have a paradigm for this. They fear it, like what you said, Luke. Go ahead.
I had a question for you, Doc, kind of along. So obviously you talked about doing voice analysis, and I know just pulling up and without even really digging deep into your webpage, you know, there's that, it does give kind of hints if you don't really know you and your background, then kind of a new age vibe. I'll just be honest. But first impression, I didn't know. Can you kind of go into maybe the stuff, how you researched or what God showed you? Obviously, we got the creator of the universe, and there's his ways are not our ways. So just because the new age is doing some things with energy doesn't mean that God didn't, he's not the origin of it. So I'm curious on the energy side of things and on the voice analysis. If we want to shift gears into that.
One of the first things, and I'll segue into the soul if I can in a couple of minutes, but one of the first things you have to do if you're a normal, reasoning, intelligent individual is to ask the question, when you see anything, is this universal mechanics or is this some kind of witchcraft? The problem that exists is that people don't know that the same universal mechanics that witches and warlocks use, we also use. Okay? We bless people and it goes into the quantum and then the blessing finds its place. Okay? So there's like a force field that's everywhere throughout the multiverse. Okay? They use it because it's mechanical. It's part of how the fabric of creation is made. Cause and effect. Okay? And so they've learned to use it the evil way. Well, what do we do? As Christians, the first thing we do is we bury folks while they're still alive. And, you know, we shoot our own, you know? Without even asking just normal questions, I mean, like sixth grade level questions is, okay, so gemstones, for instance, have frequencies, when I was a kid, you guys are too young to remember any of this. It didn't even exist then. But I had a crystal radio. It had a quartz crystal. Oh my gosh, I'm practicing New Age. Well, guess what? Gold and silver are elements. Your wife must be practicing New Age if she has a diamond ring on, or ruby, or emerald, or opals, or pearls. Okay. Well, what I've learned to do is I've learned to put them in a base of something and take all bad energy and good energy and put them out through the stones and enhance the bioenergetic field that we walk in. Okay. Now, that doesn't speak to voice analysis. Here's how that came about. I do a very advanced form of muscle testing, which some people think is New Age too, but boo-hoo, I don't care anymore. I'm too old. It didn't hurt me anymore. Everything's paid off. It doesn't hurt me, people. You can say everything you want to say. I'll go to court and sever all your accusations because I know how to use the courtrooms of heaven, okay? So when the first testing that I did, I realized that the body has an energy field that comes out about 4 to 5 feet if you're healthy, sometimes 6 feet. People that aren't real well, maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet. But there is actually a bubble that we walk in, so to speak, okay?
Doc, may I interject real quick? Because we've talked about this during the COVID time, because that 6 foot energy, and then they were saying, well, you got to stay farther than 6 feet apart. Then we're disconnected, and we're not that energy that you're referring to. We're not getting that communion with one another.
Right. And we need that. And we actually need that because that's the way God made us. So what I found out, first of all, is that let's just say I was walking by Walmart and I brushed your shoulder. Well, if I stepped aside immediately and my wife was with me, because my bioenergetic field crossed yours, I could think of you and she could test me and it would be your test because my field just took a picture of your test. What I didn't know for the first 10 years or so was that the voice also carried the same messages, the imprint. The voice is sending out a picture on a spiritual level, a truth level, an integrity level. If people really knew the level of testing that I could do, probably nobody on this planet would talk to me because they'd be afraid that I'd be analyzing them all the time, which I'm too busy. I can't do that.
Talk about a body language expert to the nth degree, right?
Right.
I'm not
right.
Talking to that guy.
Okay. So when I can tell somebody from their voice that their grandparents on the mother's side, two generations back, showed from having some kind of an attachment with the fraternal order, and it's all scientific, there's no way I'm getting that, believe it or not. I'm just going to burst some people's bubble. I'm not getting that spiritually. My spiritual stuff works with that because I walk as a son. But I'm getting it through pure energy that the voice is broadcasting. So and this has happened to me over dozens of times now. And so this lady said, oh, yeah, my grandma and grandpa on my mama's side, he was 33rd degree Mason. And she was an Eastern Star. She never told me that. She never told me anything about her health. Mm-hmm. I nailed her adrenal glands being weak and, you know, IBS and, you know, all this other kind of stuff all through the voice. There's nothing hocus pocus about it. There's nothing New Age about it. It's just that the New Age people are smarter than most of us. Can I just say that?
Well, they're willing to look at it for one thing.
So they go, oh, wow, this stuff's flowing out through the universe. We didn't ask the questions. Who made it?
Right.
We just assumed because it's not in our little bubble, as you say, Luke.
Would you say?
Go ahead.
Well, I like how you put it very simply in the beginning. So if we open up our minds or close our eyes and just think of the supernatural realm as highways, you know, there's energies going out there. I mean, there's invisible stuff that we talk about, we use all the time, and we're using the technology right now, whether it's
wireless.
TV or radio or whatever, wireless stuff.
Yeah, and I'm actually seeing you guys on my screen. How's that even possible?
Right.
So the way you describe New Age or the occult or witchcraft, they're tapping into stuff. Christians are supposed to be embracing the supernatural. So just because there's evil lines, there's good lines, and we need to embrace what is there that in that realm that God wants us to possess and to use for our benefit so that we can fulfill his mandate on this earth.
And I think too, we've talked with, you know, we've had Timothy Bentz on the show a few times, Doc, and I mentioned his name to you before, because he's mm-hmm. the only other one besides yourself that I've heard talk about going into heavenly realms, spiritual realms, and, you know, in some cases strategizing with Jesus right there about the day or the year, you know, these kind of incredible things. You guys kind of have that in common, but I think the difference, as we've talked about in different shows, is when the New Age does it, when the occultist does it, they're doing it devoid of God with their own impulse. I am going to accomplish this versus God, is this how you want me to operate? Okay, I will go here. And so it's without his leading and it's pushing God out. But what I was going to ask, Doc, is, do you feel like, because you're saying it's, yes, spiritual discernment, but it's more a technology. Would you liken it to, you know, the way that a frequency analyzer can break down a song and go, these are the frequencies. It's playing at 300 hertz here on the guitar. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, is that the type of precision that you're able to kind of pull out and go, hey, 33rd degree Mason on your mother's side, you know?
Well, okay, so everything that I do has to have an energy footprint or signature in order for me to even be able to ask the question. Okay, so if it's not there, I can't make it up. And what are the chances of me doing well over a dozen people and nailing every single one, including some people that didn't know, and then they went back and did the research and said, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe it, but you were exactly right. How does that continually come out of their voice? You see, I mean, we're fearfully and wonderfully made, but we have to understand there is evil intent and then there's righteous intent. The question is in the near universe around us, there are all kind of technologically frequency, sound, light pathways that we don't understand. Like one of the biggest jokes that's going on today is this whole thing about aliens. Okay. Now, are there what look like aliens? Yes. But are they aliens? My answer is no. Okay. What about Satan's seed? Who's Satan's seed? Well, it was when the serpent had sex with Eve and a serpent line was born. Theory, and all, yeah. Yeah, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know about any of that stuff. What I do know is that there are individuals that are out there that we would call Nephilim or branches of the whole Nephilim concept. They're the ones that have the technology because they were completely cut off from heaven's technology, from the way heaven works. So in order to maintain a certain level of their functionality, they had to take what they did or had around them at their disposal to come up with these flying devices and, you know, who knows how far back even before Adam that was still going on, because the fall of the angelic took place a long, long time ago. And so all we're seeing is this going on around us. They're the ones that really are behind, you see the Illuminati pyramid. Well, guess mm-hmm. who's behind the Illuminati pyramid? You know, the multidimensional phasing in and out, Bigfoot, Nephilim, alien grays, half of those could just be android things. You know, we're so, I hate to say it, but we're almost narcissistic as human beings to the point where we think that we're the only ones that has technology of any kind. And if we don't think about it, it must not exist. Okay. Well, this is what we're up against. But let me get back to this real important point. A spirit of religion is a really powerful thing. It's what locks people in to their soul being basically flipped from the positive polarity to the negative polarity, and the soul becomes the gatekeeper. And so when anything new comes through, then the soul says, I can't let the body or the mind really understand this. I read somewhere where we get like, I don't know what the number is now, like 20 billion bits of information per second. But by the time it gets to our brain, it's like 300 or something, you know, something ridiculous like that. Well, why is that way? Why is there any stepping down from what happens around us spiritually? What are the filters in the way? Well, that's where the soul comes in. And so most of the work that we do in our early walk of Christianity, which is called sanctification, by the way, is we chew or we cut our teeth by getting ourselves straightened up. But if the church won't even tell us what that is, and people won't read their own Bible to see what that is, the soul stays the gatekeeper. And then all these other things that are going on around us, wonderful heavenly technologies available to us today to live in both realms at the same time, we can't even get there because our person is out of synchronization. At the fall, our spirit was inverted. It used to be around us. We were a being of light, and then everything kind of got sucked in, like on a sci-fi movie. Now we have our flesh, then our soul, then our spirit. Well, the heart is the convergence point of all three. And if all three are balanced, that's when all of a sudden we start being able to participate in things like the supernatural. So for instance, there's all kinds of, how did Enoch know how to do what he did? Well, there were gateways that he knew about. Well, those are universally mechanic. That's what the secret societies and the hidden cultures are trying to find. Well, we have everything inside of us that we need. As believers, we go in to go up. We don't have outer body experiences. We don't need to. Our spirit can travel anywhere we need to go. And we have multiple layers of our spirit. You say, oh, brother, that's heresy. Well, okay, how can Jesus be like 50 billion places at the same time in body? And it's really him, but he's in all those places at the same time. We're made in his image. Maybe we have four or five.
Doc, we had a story that Tim Bench shared with us once where he was sleeping in his bed in his home. And at the same time, he was physically present. I think it was Russia. And he was speaking to a church and having dinner with them. And then It was like months later, he visited and they're like, yeah, you were here. Really? Which night? Yeah. So it's mind bending. Before I forget, though, I don't know if you had expanded on what you were going to say when we were talking about the cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, that was the soul thing.
The soul thing. Okay, great.
The soul gets flipped around and it becomes a gatekeeper instead of a way for the spirit to flow and then bless our natural understanding and in our actual mind.
Okay.
And see, because one of the things, and I put this in my book, and then it was kind of funny because a few months later I heard Dan Duvall teach about it. And we have a common friend, one of the guys that's on his staff, actually, I sent the book to. So I don't know if Dan ever got it or whatever.
He used it.
Yeah, well, maybe. But that's okay, because I love Dan. I mean, I've never met him in person, never talked to him. But he really is a really good teacher. Mm-hmm. And he's got good stuff. Yeah. But anyway, the body, soul, and spirit all have their own mind, will, and emotions. Each. We actually, okay, your spirit has a mind, will, and emotions. Your soul has a mind, will, and emotions.
Interesting.
Your body has mind, will, and emotions, which is how we can have lust of the flesh. And as an overlay, see, it's not just our soul. See, you know, what was the guy's name? Jay Adams. He didn't even believe in a three-part of man. And then he would teach, you know, well, you know, it's just your soul and blah, blah, blah. Most of the people that have taught us and wrote those books didn't have a clue how the supernatural really works, okay? And so, because our spirit, hey, we were a spirit before we came here. That's heresy to a lot of people, but we were not made, most of us, right at the moment of conception. We were spirits in heaven. We weren't fallen angels and God sent us here to be punished. We are a very special created group of individuals who had a mission, which was to, as family, undo all the chaotic, horrendous things that the fall of Lucifer put on the different dimensions and realms.